Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Lindy. How are you?
I'm very well. Have you met Damien before?
No, we haven't.
Well, we shake hands across.
It's lovely to see you, Damien.
That's beautiful. I loved it. I felt as if I...
You're bringing people together,
a rooftop, rooftop embrace.
Well, yes. We probably shouldn't talk more about that. Now, there's been a bit big news with Murdoch today. What's going on?
Yes, no, very big news with the Murdoch empire. Rupert's done a very big shuffle where he's appointed a couple of his loyalists to take charge of Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal. So the man in London running his newspapers in London is an Australian guy called Les Hinton. He's coming across to New York, and the editor of the Times in London is going across to become the publisher of the Wall Street Journal, all of which facilitates the really big announcement, which is promotion for his youngest son, James Murdoch, who goes from being the chief executive of B Sky B at the tender age of 34 to running the entire Asian and European operations of News Corporation, which is a massive step up for a young man.
Is he up to it?
I don't think any 34-year-old would be up to it. I mean, Rupert's trying to create another Rupert, and there's only one Rupert. So, I mean, the oldest three children have all either, you know, had a go or, you know, fallen short and got out and had enough, and so James is the youngest of the four adult children, the last man standing. And Rupert, his dad, is a very dynastic kind of guy, and he's dead keen for someone to take the job. So he's positioned him today with this. It hasn't actually formally been announced, but there's widespread reports on the wires. So yeah, it's a very big issue, and it actually ties into my highlight of the year, I have to say, because going to New York and putting up a resolution at the News Corp annual meeting to end the gerrymander, which would allow this sort of nepotism to happen, was my highlight of the year, because I got $5 billion worth of stock supporting it. So I'm sort of very interested that after Rupert had that big protest vote saying, you know, we want one vote, one value, we want meritocracy, etc., that just a few weeks after that big protest vote from his independent shareholders, he's done a very brazen piece of nepotism.
He's poked the tongue out. In fact, he's probably done worse than that, which
I
can't see. He completely has.
He goes, I might not like the royal family, but I do like the royal Murdoch family,
yes.
And I like nepotism at News Corp. So it's an interesting situation.
Although you sort of wonder, given that the others have tried it and stepped away, the other children, will James do the same sort of thing? And what's his history? Was it too early to tell at 34?
Well, you know, he dropped out of Harvard, I think. He did ran his own little music label and then ran News Corp's very small music business, then got the big job when he was in his late 20s running Star TV in Asia out of Hong Kong, which was the big sort of Indian, Chinese, Asian pay TV operation. Then got the big B Sky B job 4 years ago and has done a reasonable job there, so no stuff-ups. No sort of Lachlan Murdoch, OneTel, Super League type things. So a relatively unblemished record, and everyone else dropped out of the race. Last man standing, and you know, here we go with the biggest management shuffle we've seen at News Corp for many years today.
Okay, and the question is, how long will that last? Set up to fail, we'll see.
Well, I mean, Rupert's, you know, he always says you have to take me out with the boots on. So, you know, I think Rupert will go for another 10 years if he stays alive. And he'll just groom his son, you know, so he can probably take over when he's in his 40s. That would be the plan.
Still plenty of time for you to fight him, though.
Well, I'll put up another resolution next year, you know. One vote, one value, more democracy at News Corp.
Tuesday, you and I were talking about the Ministerial Code of Conduct that was going to be announced by the federal government, and they've done that. Is there enough in there to make you happy?
Look, I was happy. I was very happy. I thought things like a lobbyist's register was good. I think things like all ministers must sell all their shares is terrific. So, you know, Therese Raine, Kevin Rudd's wife, is literally selling $2 million worth of shares this week to accommodate that. And the thing that got me most excited was this 18-month cooling-off period where you can't take a job relevant to your portfolio for 18 months. And if you look
after you leave.
After you leave, yeah. And if you look at sort of the what I think was the debauchery of ministerial standards under John Howard, the very, very worst of it was things like Peter Reith getting a job with 10x 48 hours after leaving as defence minister, John Fay going straight from privatising everything to 4 months later working for JP Morgan on privatisation, Larry Anthony 6 months after leaving as children's minister joining the board of ABC Learning, biggest childcare company. Richard Alston, 6 months out of Parliament, goes from communications minister to lobbying for Fox FM and Triple M about digital radio. And the worst of all, Michael Wooldridge, 7 days before the 2001 election, gave a $5 million grant to the GP's lobby group, who then promptly hired him straight after the election. So
What are you saying? That's bad.
It's a shameful fluffing the pillow era.
Yeah, it's a shameful roll call. That it really is a shameful roll call. And Kevin Rudd has come out and said you cannot do anything for 18 months. That is a very good step.
Yeah, that's very good. In fact, someone sitting next to you will have a view on that as well. Dennis Altman is the Professor of Politics at La Trobe University. Hello, Dennis.
Hi, Lindy.
And Stephen Mayne.
And hello, Stephen.
Look, shaking of hands. Beautiful.
Well, listen, you're running a salon up here. This is absolutely
fabulous. Exactly what I'm doing.
I think this should become a regular event, except perhaps when we get storms.
Yeah, that's right. It is a bit, we were a bit disturbed about what the weather report was saying about today, but it's turned out to be absolutely beautiful, which is terrific. Mm-hmm. Were you happy with the code of conduct? Stephen obviously is from... a corporate perspective. What about
I would agree with what Stephen said, and I think we've had a really bad history over the last 10 years of people basically going from government into jobs where the only qualification was they had previously been in government. So that if Rudd sticks to this, great. The only note of caution I'd make is, of course, when John Howard came in, he also promised us better, cleaner, less corrupt government. And that lasted, about a year? I think I'm right, Stephen. A couple of the early ministers had to stand down.
Well, he lost seven in his first term, so they were dropping like flies. And then he drew the line at his old flatmate, Warwick Pera, and just said, I can't sack a flatmate. And that was it. He junked the standards from
there
then on.
There is the code.
That's right, the flatty code. Yeah. Most of them got overseas postings. There was a special flatmates club.
But this, of course, is another question I have. Will Amanda Vanstone be brought back from Italy? When will Richard Alston be brought back from London? Because under the Howard government, people will remember, quite a few ministers got parked, as it were, conveniently overseas. Now, I don't quite sure what conventions are here. In the US, all ambassadors automatically resign when a new president comes in, and it's taken for granted they'll be replaced. And I think in our system, we would not expect a career diplomat to stand down, but someone who owes their position, as Amanda Vanstone did, to a cabinet reshuffle, and they want to get rid of her, clearly ought to stand down.
Do they not have the same levels of diplomatic tenure, though? Do they not say, right, you've got the job for 2 years?
I don't think so. My understanding is that they would be there at the pleasure of the government. And I know, for example, when Neil Blewett, who'd been a minister under the Hawke and Keating government, was sent to London as High Commissioner, when Howard came in, the Howard government actually said, no, we will keep Blewett till the end of his term. But I think the honourable thing, and we expect honourable things of our former ministers, however disappointed we're doomed to be. The honourable thing is, of course, to offer your resignation, and I would hope, in the case of political appointments, Rudd would accept them, if only so he can give his own
it's
people.
A great image of the HMS Canberra just being sent around the world, just picking them up. All returning into the Sydney Harbour together, all trussed together.
Well, there's a big long list of them, Dennis. Yep. I mean, the Bill Farmer went from Immigration Department stuff-ups with Cornelia Rowell and Vivian Solon to our lead diplomat in Ambassador in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. So I think it will be very interesting. And I was up in Canberra last night talking. I gave a talk to a bunch of public service spin doctor types, and they were all amazed that the Rudd government has literally done nothing to clean or purge. I mean, even departmental secretaries like Peter Boxall, who was a long-time Liberal Party warrior, former Costello staffer, worked on Fight Back. I mean, the guy's just tribally liberal, and he's been moved from one department.
Yep.
To another department.
So what's the reason? I was reading that this morning, and I thought, I can't understand what the reasoning is. Is it just to keep the status quo for a while before you start taking the hatchet to somebody?
I think it all comes back to the advertising, which was nothing personal, Mr. Howard, but your time is up. And then Kevin Rudd's very first words on Saturday night, which were, we must all recognise John Howard's performance. So he has clearly decided that he's going to be very, very gentle, to the point of even Barbara Bennett, who fronted the Work Choices ads, not getting removed. So I think he's gone too far the other way. You've got to have a bit of purging.
Always
going to
be dodgy trying to remove
will happen. Yeah, it will be dodgy. Yeah. And I suspect what will happen is that within 6 months there'll be a cabinet reshuffle, as some ministers turn out not to be able to do what they were asked to do and vice versa. There'll be some rearrangement of the administrative structures. Maybe even the super ministry that Julia Gillard presides over will be broken up. And at that point, I would imagine some major reshuffle of departmental heads.
With me this afternoon at my salon, as Dennis has termed it, and rightly so, up on the roof of ABC, Lindy Burns with you on my last day on air for this year, together with Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist, of course, Dennis Altman, the Professor of Politics at La Trobe University, and Damien Callinan, comedian. And I'm Lindy Burns, broadcaster. Lovely to have you along. If you'd like to take part in the conversation, you can call. We are still taking your calls on 1300 222 774, or send a text, and we'll try and get that up here as well on 19 774 774. Dennis, one of the first things that there are question marks over for the Rudd ministry has been what seems to be a back down on Kyoto, or certainly a back down on what sorts of measures we might take in Australia in terms of carbon emissions. What sort of indication is that for you?
Well, I guess, to be fair to Rudd, he did, in a sense, flag that, didn't he, during the campaign? I mean, that was
Well, he wants to wait 12 months now until this report comes out, and he's always said that.
And he's had the report. Ross Garnaut was commissioned while he was leader of the opposition. I think it's a great pity, because I think that Australia went into the Bali conference with this huge moral weight. You know, we were cheered. It was an extraordinary shift in the way we're perceived internationally on this issue, at least. And I think it's a pity that, that Rudd has, for undoubtedly very good pragmatic reasons, and he is a very good pragmatist, let some of that slip. But as I understand it, we're still committed to taking part in an international process, and we're, there's some shift in that from the previous government.
Stephen?
I have to say, I was disappointed with Brendan Nelson's very heavy-handed response there, really sort of almost aping John Howard's climate scepticism, when he really launched a major assault on Rudd and said, you know, you will destroy the economy, you will cause massive economic damage if you lock into the bigger cuts of 25 to 40%. I mean, I would have thought you should be a bit more aspirational, and that if the coalition is going to try and get more green and they are not going to complain about Kyoto, then they really, it's quite irresponsible to be preaching utter doom and gloom when the reports are showing, you know, yes, there are going to be some issues for our economy, but it's like, you know, do we want to go back to exporting asbestos because we could sell $200 million without? I mean, carbon is a poison and you must deal with it. So yes, there will be less sales of coals in the long term, but that's just the reality.
And it's going to happen either way.
Yeah.
It has to happen.
So stop sort of saying we'll be damaged by selling more poisonous carbon, because that's the whole point.
And people know this, don't they? I mean, this is the great tragedy. Nelson, of course, is presumably doing what he had to do to get those three votes to beat Malcolm Turnbull for leadership. I mean, that is, to me, the great current tragedy in Australian politics. The leader of the opposition is not going to say what he thinks. He's going to say what he needs to say to keep the right wing of his party on side sufficiently to present a leadership challenge.
Highlight of the year for you, Dennis. Highlight of the year for you.
Highlight of the year for me. Actually, the personal highlight of the year for me was discovering Mexico City, Lindy.
Not personally in that way. It was there before you found it.
I'm afraid it was, and it continues to be there long after, although I'm going back next year. No, I think, you know, one would have to say the political highlight clearly was the change of government. I was actually trying to remember how it felt this time last year. Did we really believe that John Howard was immortal and would stay there forever, which, you know, I think some people in the Liberal Party probably did? Or did we already have a sense that change was coming? And I don't think December 06 we did. You do?
No, I don't think we did have a sense of it.
No, I think you're right. It's a long time. A year is a long time in politics. It's a long time in everything. Thank you, gentlemen. It's been terrific to have you part of the show this year. And despite the fact, Stephen, every now and then you would just step away for things that you were pursuing, and we couldn't have you on.
2% in the federal election. Well, thank you for having me back, Andy. It's very kind of you to pick up a loser out of the gutter like that.
And Stephen, you've got to earn back your deposit somewhere or another.
I'm halfway to a deposit.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Dennis. See you both again next year. Stephen Mayne and Dennis Altman, can you thank them, please?